make sure it's working. And it is my pleasure to welcome again to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Nan Kunst. She is the MC for this evening, which is going to be a collaboration of people reading their own work, students of Margaret Kaminsky Shapiro and her Sonoma County Writing Practice Group. We are delighted to welcome you and all of you to Many Rivers tonight. Thank you so much.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you, Jim and Rob, for inviting us. I love Many Rivers. I love this location. I love the way the bookcases just stand back and let us all be here. And thank you for coming, readers and family and friends and supporters. I was lucky enough to get to help make this book with a number of other lovely women, and it was just a fabulous experience. I've been writing with Margaret since 2005, and I just keep learning and just keep writing. So let's get started. We're going to probably each, just to readers that are here tonight, probably each read a piece and then go around again. So plan to read two pieces, and then maybe Margaret will lead us through a writing practice. So I'm going to start with Margaret, our teacher and leader and supporter extraordinaire.
Thank you. Well, hello everyone, and I'm so glad to be here again. We did hair pieces here some years back, and it's just amazing to have these life cycles, watching our lives and watching ourselves moving through time. And I want to read a piece that I wrote called What I Want You to Know About Me. I began writing stories inside my mother's womb as I floated in a warm, salty sea. I placed ancient scripts onto red walls telling of beginnings and endings. And when it was time to leave that red-walled cocoon, when the lights were beckoning, my small hands groped for the words to bring those scrolls with me, to tell my story of beginning. What I want you to know is that my South African childhood was splashed with vivid color, great panoramas of color, sound, fragrance. The Indian market sang with the conversations of Hindi. Gold bracelets clinked together as bags of oranges were lifted, and hawkers called out the price of their fresh produce. The bells of the rickshaws tinkled in the background. The aroma of curry pervaded my childhood, interspersed with mango, frangipani, and wet ochre-red soil. What I want you to know is that my father died defending the Pequots. The struggle to uphold human rights and humane laws against the ubiquitous laws of apartheid finally took its toll. The Pequots were a group of 18 freedom fighters, and their stories are photographically presented in the halls of the Apartheid Museum, a somber hall of memories. What I want you to know is that it was the leaving of my birthland that led me into writing. I became a writer in America. As I drove the Santa Monica Freeway, I was becoming a writer. As I scorched my hands with words, my pen on fire, I was becoming a writer. And as my roots grew deep into American soil, I was becoming a writer. What I want you to know about me is that I cannot leave those old stories behind. They are the stories that made me into a writer.
And next, applaud whenever you want. Next, we'll hear from Diana Hart.
Oh, okay. Great. We do a lot of writing about the critic, and the critic doesn't stand much of a chance in the warm atmosphere that Margaret creates. But we get to play with the critics anyway. Let me introduce you to the voice that says, "You cannot." The voice sits behind and a little above my left shoulder. The voice hisses, tense, disapproving, almost parental, "Better not." It whispers from its thin-lipped mouth, "Listen to me, I know best." There's another voice that thunders, "Thou shalt not," like lightning aimed at me from a pointing finger. However the voice comes, the results are the same. I stop. I stop breathing. I stop writing. The pen hovers over the page, paralyzed, a gun shooting blanks. The church, my father, and teachers asked, "Why are you interested in that?" They were puzzled by my questions about transcendentalism and the Holocaust. The priest, who did not look at me, but looked down and said, "It's a sin to doubt. Don't question. Go say 3 Hail Marys and 1 Our Father and kneel now." Somehow the voices outside moved inside. They settled into sinew, into blood, filled my hair follicles like mercury absorbed from toxic sea life. But here, the voices hush in this warm room. Blue ink flows over white paper. I hear other scratching pens, hearts leaking out into new notebooks. I stayed wild in spite of my father. I found deep spirituality in spite of the priests. I stayed curious, open to living my questions. Life has brought me other, truer voices. And the loneliness of sitting in pews and facing Our Father is replaced by the intense strength of circles.
And next we'll hear from Frieda Farrick.
My parents were Holocaust survivors, and I have been moved throughout my life to tell their story. And the way I write is poetry, so I'm going to share the first one with you called My Father's Grief. And I cannot do it without these things. My father, a survivor, had simple needs. His family, playing cards with his friends, supporting us, going grocery shopping with my mom. One day, when I was 11 years old, I saw him sitting on his bed, mostly dressed, crying. "What's wrong, Daddy?" He said, "Sometimes I remember my other family." That morning, he briefly talked about his 2 other daughters. The stories ran into each other, and I don't know if it was that morning when he talked about his 12-year-old daughter who told him at the gate of the concentration camp, "Papa, you will live even if we don't." He was separated from the women in his life, his 12-year-old daughter, his 5-year-old daughter, his wife, and his mother. He never saw them again. He never saw them again.
And next is Susan Weinstein.
This seems to be a favorite among my friends. I need a stunt double. I need a stunt double. Someone who would go to my job while I stay home. I'd get more exercise. I'd practice clair de lune on the harp. The next day, I would go to work and the stunt double could organize and clean the house, walk around Spring Lake once the tasks were completed. I need a stunt double when things get too difficult to handle. I could hand off the phone or just plain refuse to continue dealing with bad situations. We'd never be seen together, like Clark Kent and Superman. Who would know? I wouldn't need a wife or even a maid. A stunt double would keep everything going, and I could help at least part of the time. Mostly, I could try new things and step out to allow the stunt double to complete the most difficult and dangerous task. Stunt doubles are trained to jump off ledges and out of windows. My stunt double wouldn't need to do that. Imagine the next time I'm called in to resolve a conflict or am faced with a supervisor at work who would like a moment of my time to clarify a situation. I could say yes to the meeting and send in my stunt double. Thank you.
Ever since I read that, ever since I heard Susan read it, I thought, every time I hear it, is it Susan or could it be? And next we'll hear from the real Kathleen Devereaux. And I've chosen to read another writer's work, Robert Kennedy. And this is My Mother's Hands. Mm. Fine imported hands designed in France, crafted in Germany. A final finish of feeling from Ireland. They could have held a scalpel or a painter's brush. Instead, they rubbed clothes on washboards, held frying pans, cradled me in their nest, held switches and belts when I strayed. Always stronger than their delicate architecture should allow. Beautiful, slender, and smooth. Now she sees them as flawed. Black veins, new to her, exhibit themselves to her saran-wrapped skin. Like an advancing cancer or serpent creeping their way to her heart. Her heart and her hands. What a wonderful team they made. And next we'll hear from Helen Thompson, another of our committee members that helped create the book.
I'm going to read I Am an American Writer. They asked me when I first wrote, and I said I began writing in my pink fake leather diary, the one with the locking strap, around age 11. I wrote about riding bikes too far from the house with my best friend, sneaking 5 and 10 miles away, carrying peanut butter sandwiches wrapped in wax paper and water canteens in our wire handlebar baskets. I wrote about how my pets, a pair of cats, a German shepherd, and dozens of small farm animals were my closest relatives, closer than the humans in the house. These creatures knew how to listen, to look without a frown, and to share warmth and compassion. I wrote about my first chemistry set, a box of shiny orange metal that stood up on end and had hinges that opened like a book to reveal shelves of bottled mysterious ingredients you could mix up to create explosions or bubbling ooze. My next experience writing was in Bluebirds. I seemed to always get voted in as scribe, the one who took the notes at our meetings. I wrote about the art project of making craft baskets to take to the hospitals for people with TB. I wrote about who would first get snacks the next week and who would soon fly up into Campfire Girls. I began writing in my first journal after a nasty divorce somewhere around age 28. Like Forrest Gump running across America, I wrote and wrote and wrote, on and on and on, filling dozens of big fat journals. I wrote about what we all write about, fears, bad decisions, hate, resentment, loss, sadness, pain, hopes, dreams, and victories, and I'm still writing. I am an American writer, a woman who asks, listens, and waits, who knows to make room for the simmering and the dancing of the muse. Mystery is her lover. They know each other well.
Oh.
And now we'll hear from Tia Evenson. Evanson?
Thea.
Thea. I keep doing that. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Anyway.
I'm actually going to read from the first anthology.
Good. Yay.
Yeah. I'm going to read a story called The Overnight Train to Oaxaca. She met him on the overnight train to Oaxaca. They sat uncomfortably side by side on the faded crimson upholstery as the train pitched and swayed through the dark countryside. By morning, they'd become traveling companions as she made her way to Guatemala and he headed further south to Panama. What began as a few days' journey lasted for 6 weeks. He never got to Panama. They eased into each other cautiously. No sex at first, but the promise of it hung in the air. She eyed his long blonde hair and big graceful hands as he put morning flowers on her pillow. She imagined those hands all over her. They fell in lust while lingering in San Cristobal de las Casas before crossing the border. Their courtship sweetened in cheap hotel rooms and creaking truck beds while they hitched rides to exotic-sounding places like Huehuetenango, Chichicastenango, and Puerto Barrios at the end of the line. He tried to please her and even gave up smoking, though she thought it was sexy in a Robert Mitchum kind of way, when he looked at her with half-closed lids and exhaled slowly. She gave him her most adoring attention day by day, and the romance flourished through the early spring. What she loved most, of course, was the fantasy of it all. Strangers meeting on a train, no past, no future, no promises, no plans. They took it as it came until one inevitable April afternoon while they strolled arm in arm through the Solala market. He leaned close and whispered he'd never leave, and her heart snapped shut. He talked about their life together, and she packed her bags. That's how it was with her, all present and no future. No talk about forever, no happily ever after, or she'd be gone in an instant. The next bus, the next train, would carry her somewhere else, anywhere she could hide from the panic that engulfed her when she felt cornered by commitment. Somewhere she might be lucky enough to cross paths with someone willing to take her at face value, one day at a time.
Yeah. And Diana Glassman, next. Would you like to be next after?
Yeah. Okay.
We'll hear from Diana in just a moment. But until Diana's ready, we'll hear from Heidi Pillow.
Mother and daughter. I look at her and I do not see myself, not even in a gesture, expression, or the shape of her foot. It has always been that way. She is 21 now, and grievances against her mother rise and take sharp forms that spread out to reveal her own contours. It has always been that way for mothers. Even so, I long to stay in this world for her sake. She does not yet know how much she needs older women. It has always been that way. And so I have been weaving together a safety net of wise women, dear friends who can be there for my daughter, should I not. I know that I am blessed to know so many wise women. I also know, in some corner of my being, that I cannot protect her from the cliff falls that happen to all of us. Even so, I want to reassure her that I will always be there for her, in the trees, in the flowers, under her kitchen table. But these are the granite promises of a mother, and life's mysteries are even stronger than that. It has always been that way. Of all that I can truly leave behind, writings, artwork, earrings she won't like. I want her to find threads of love and truth left by me that will help her love her own life.
And now we will hear from Diana.
How embarrassing. Okay. I'm going to read something by Marie Galetta. It's called Yes. Mm. Look, I am trying to accomplish something here on this page. Mm-hmm. My typewriter keys are thumping in Morse code. Long, short, short, long. Pause. Click, click, click of the mouse. Outside it's dark. The fog creeps, crisp and sweet through the open window of my writing room, where I'm holed up, trying to cut lines with the precision of a razor blade so the sky will crack open for us both. Maybe I'll reach that girl at the back corner of the bookstore, you know, the one that's hunched in front of the tiny poetry section, copying poems on whatever paper she can find, gum wrapper, received from the supermarket, glancing back over her shoulder to avoid getting caught by the store manager. Later, pinning the words to the wall beside her bed or placing them under a heavy magnet on the fridge. Each time she walks by, nodding absentmindedly, tracing the lines, mumbling, yes, absolutely, yes.
And Lisa? Lisa Young?
I'm going to read a piece that's written by Kat Delt. Is she here? I just want to make sure she's not here. Silent Child. Silent Child, dare I ask you to speak? Your heart is locked away, throat shut tight from fear of burdening them. Who knows what would shatter when you utter from tears unshed? Unreached, you cry inside, but no one hears. I long to free you, to hold you, to love you. Will you cry just for me? Unseal the veil of muteness. Let us know who you are. Let us know what your heart beats for. What have you seen, dear child? What have you felt? How is the world from inside your shoes? Let me touch your hidden story. Let me run my fingers along the knots of aloneness and gently loosen their bind and your agony. Let me soothe you by feeling your tears soak my shoulder and the heat of your breath on my ear. Quivering sounds, birthing silence from its untouched mystery, be born again, my silent child. Erupt the secret void of your untold life.
Are there any other Sonoma County Writing Practice writers that came to read that I haven't called yet? Did you want to read?
Yes, I can read.
And your name?
Susan Whit Butler.
Susan Whit Butler, you're next. I'm sorry I missed you when you came in.
That's all right.
I would like to thank Margaret, though, for providing this opportunity for me and opening this door to my life. I'm going to read, humbly, another person's beautiful work, Regina Ramos Hooker, and it's called Luminescence. I know I don't usually like to be asked how I'm doing, but ask me now. I want to be asked. I need to tell you I'm mortal. I know I don't usually tell you how much you mean to me, but know it now. You are a link to infinity. My love for you is natural and can be defined as rare, as a gray fox sitting in the lap of an oak tree, or the luminescence of a harvest moon at midnight. If I haven't thanked you lately, picture an envelope on your fence post filled with kisses and blueberries. Don't be tempted to turn them down. They never end.
When I first came to writing practice, I thought I was going to be a novelist, and I was writing a novel. And I wrote a novel, I wrote another novel. But the more I was in writing practice, the more I got into poetry, and the more I got into just writing whatever came to me. I've lost both my parents in the last few years, so I'm doing a lot of looking back. And I suspect when we do our next anthology, there'll be pieces about my parents. But for this anthology, I did write a piece about my grandmother, Nonna. I remember Nonna. I remember Nonna in her burnt orange dress, the one she wore for church or company, until it faded, served enough Sundays, and became a house dress. I remember Nonna's damp hands and apron. She would hug me hello, her smell a mixture of dampness, oil, garlic, and age. I remember her mannerisms, little windows into another world, the one she escaped from, the old country. I remember stories, no shoes, eating from the pig trough, the word tremendous often used. R's rolled dramatically. Tremendous cold, tremendous hunger, tremendous fear. I remember Nonna, the way she came alive in the kitchen. She was sure of herself, using flour, yeast, water, and salt. She was an ethnic cooking show dispensing trade secrets. The crispiest crust, the lightest loaves, the smoothest texture, and tremendous flavor. I remember Nonna creating her special herb blend, oregano, rosemary, and parsley. I remember the squeak of her clothesline as she wheeled out the clean, wet linens. I remember the thrill of being allowed to wheel in fresh-smelling, crisp-dried towels, rags, and aprons. The rags were once her shirts or dresses. Everything was recycled until it was dust. Rubber bands were used until they snapped with age. Bottles, jars, cans, containers of all kinds were saved for preserving. Gifts of fresh fruit became cured peaches, pears, or dried prunes, and everything came with a story. I remember the tremendous story, Nonna.
Whoa.
She lived to be 99.
Oh, wow.
That's tremendous.
Margaret, would you like to start our next round?
Sure. Would you one more round, and then perhaps we can do a quick write as well?
Did you want to do another round, or did you want to write next?
Is everyone going to do a second read, or no? Mm-hmm. Just a few of us that'll do a second read? Okay, mm-hmm. So let's do a second read, and then I think we'll take 15 or 20 minutes to... Yeah? You want to finish? Okay, I think we're in good time then. Yeah.
That'll work.
Perfect. Thanks, Jim. Okay, I think I'll read this. I haven't read it in a long time. This poem, it's not a poem, it's a prose piece that I wrote called Flying Pens. We write from a jump-off line, for those of you who don't know, and a jump-off line just prompts us into something that our arm wants to take us and our heart wants to take us. So it's very much in the moment. And so this was a jump-off line called Flying Pens. Pens are flying in the dark African night, lighting up the inky sky. Pens flying to tell the stories, hanging words like prayer flags on the thin blue line. Pens flying to tell the truth across mountainous borders, over wide blue oceans, above the frothy white clouds. There is no holding back now, no reason to stay in one place, sheltered, waiting for the dawn. Some would say it is dangerous to be a writer, to be a poet. Some would say it is dangerous to sit at a wooden desk with a small glass lamp casting a green light across a pile of empty pages waiting for the writer's hand. I am living in delight with these new tracks of lines, these new veins of thought, this vibrant channel of words. Spaces. Should I say something about spaces? There are spaces between the words, thoughts bedecked in orange and purple silk scarves. Sometimes a thought fractures, sometimes it flows gracefully into the next verdant forest of words. Flying pens weave tapestries, seams knot together words with animal skins, glittering mirrors, and fragments of flying glass. Of colored glass. Flying pens dance into my dreams, write entire stories along the insides of my eyelids.
Words unleash the secrets, open the wounds, and the poems are set free from their cages. Flying pens twitch and tremble like stars, embedded in an indigo velvet sky. Flying pens will not be silenced, will not be bled to death. Inside the forest there is a table, a writer's table, carved of ancient redwood, crafted with ancient images, timeless waterfalls of words, primal lava, flows of shapes. Join me inside that redwood grove where the branches hang prayers like a mantle. Join me in that forest of words, and together we will spin stories from the tender drops of our tears.
Okay. And Frida, would you like to read again?
Of course.
Yay.
Yay.
Do
I have a chance to read?
Right. That's why we're doing this. It's so good.
I had a conflict between reading about my own, what it was like growing up in this family, or letting you know about my Uncle Joseph. So I think I'll, he needs to be talked about.
Yeah.
So I'll,
yeah,
I'll read Uncle Joseph. The stories are sparse, the details limited, but Uncle Joseph, Uncle Joe, who died at age 23, or was it 24, you intrigued me. You were my mother's favorite sibling. Did you play stickball on the dirty streets of Lodge? Did you laugh, put spiders in your sister's beds, refuse to do your homework? I imagine that you were naughty, impulsive, fun-loving, sneaking sugar cookies, charming the ladies. Did you dance, fall in love, dream about your future? Uncle Joe, may I call you that? I can't imagine what your thoughts were in those dark days, fighting the Germans in the Warsaw Ghetto. We know you died in 1943, defying the Nazis with your last breath. There are two books with different versions of how you died. In your last moments, did you help the young mothers flee with their babies and children? Uncle Joe, I want you to know that I named a son after you. Rest in peace. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That boy is 40 years old today.
Aww.
Susan, would you or your stunt double care to read again?
Well, there's a lot of pressure there. Never know which one.
What I want you to know about me tonight. Maybe I'm just like you. We don't look alike, yet we move along similar walkways, fast, slow, stop, go, hesitating outside a bookstore window, remembering a favorite children's story, thinking about tangerines in January. Maybe I'm just like you, missing a parent who just died and knowing that there was more to a life not ready to end. A sunny afternoon stuck in traffic, hoping to arrive on time. A Victorian house with a new air conditioner. Some people I know, some I don't. Maybe I'm just like you, pen in hand, deep breaths, listening, smiles of acknowledgement, looking for the words I want, not right or wrong, just the ones that mean what I want them to. Pausing long enough to catch the words that start to float by like feathers. Feathers lightly drift, words float through my mind's eye, to the pen, to my pen. Maybe I'm just like you. Maybe you're just like me. Or at least enough to meet with a common purpose, to calm down, breathe, write, read, listen, refresh, and know writing brings me back to myself. Maybe you're just like me. Maybe I'm just like you.
Okay, would you like to read again?
It, It's up to you. I mean, if there's
it's up to you. You're welcome if you'd like to.
Okay.
Go for it. Go for it.
I'm going to read a piece by Margot Clipp, What I Must See Before It Is Too Late. Before it is too late, I must see that life is not so black and white, that truth is elusive, and that reality is ever-changing. I must see that while to be compassionate towards others is my intention, I must first start by being compassionate toward myself. I must see that when I am able to let go of the fears I carry, I have more energy for my life. I must see that the difficult people and the painful situations that I encounter are both my greatest teachers. I must see that there is strength in the tears that fall softly down my cheeks, and there is energy in my anger and in my passion. I must see people in my life are not like paint-by-number pictures, but more like oil on water, ever-changing, ever-moving. I must see that I am not alone in my pain and inner struggles, that across time and space there are fellow travelers who know my story as their own. I must see my suffering often comes from choosing to not accept what life brings. It is born of past regrets, endless comparison, self-criticism, and idealizations. I must see that in the silence there are answers, and the answers are within me. I must think that thinking things through is often not the path to clarity, that seeing clearly often comes from a deeper place within my being. I must see that letting go of the things I cannot change or control allows me to live my life more freely. I must see I cannot take my life and myself so seriously, that being able to laugh at myself is like dancing in the warm rain. I must see that all these things which I so desperately want to see, I do see at times, and yet at other times I am like a blind woman, and that, my friend, is okay.
Helen, would you want to read again?
There's another part of my life. I love Zumba. Zumba. Feet say hello. Shiny yellow pine dance floor that accepts the pounding of my soles. And they do move, these 2 feet flying like lightning, to release, to fill up, to let go. And ears say hello, salsa. Music that roars through my head, circles the room, rocks the walls, and causes people to run for their lives or dare to dance the passions of pure joy. And hello, giant, shiny, silver mirror reflecting 80 bodies, each one as happy as a filly in spring. Tight ones, jiggly ones, tall and short ones. One huge, happy family swirling, clapping, yelling with orgasmic intensity. Sexy and loud, body and electric. Hot and sweaty bodies weave and pound and gyrate to the Latin rhythms. Hello, temple for my body, this sacred place, where it can be its full, rich, brown-skinned self, where my hips and spine naturally arc and curve and sway knowingly to the deafening erotic tones. Hello, hot, steamy, wet air, say lungs as they heave and grab every morsel. Chakras, instincts, and intuition fly open, flood me, split me open with their juicy richness. Hello, dance time, where it doesn't matter if you're 63 or 48 or 19, where they dance together and we're the same for one brief hour of ecstasy. I met oneness in dance, and the dance danced me.
Yeah. Yeah.
from the same one. This is a poem that I wrote called Our Boy. His lashes, dark as feathers, quiver softly as he sleeps, eyes moving behind closed lids, mining the dream world. I stand in the doorway watching, his tender face caught on the edge of manhood, his lips full, eager for life. Was it only last night the call came? Only a few hours ago, a lifetime, the car plunged into the dark ravine and crashed into twisted metal against the cold steel tracks. My stomach tightens reflexively. What touch of grace allowed him to survive, pull himself out, and climb to safety? I watch him sleep, our youngest son, and I know I would give my life to keep him safe. Gladly take his blows with my own body. Gratefully sit by his bedside night after long night to shelter him from harm. I want that power. Oh, how I want that power. But I know it's too late. His life is now beyond my reach. I can only watch with a helpless mother's love. The wide world has already claimed him.
Heidi, did you want to read again?
Don't call me an American consumer. I was born in one of America's oldest cities in a post-war boom. Don't call me consumer. I wore a plaid cotton dress with a round white collar as I stood in line at school waiting for the new polio shot. Mm-hmm. A new generation vaccinated against fears, burdened by the bomb as we crouched under our desks waiting for a someday doom. Don't call me consumer. My cheers for Alan Shepard in seventh grade were subdued. Space travel meant as little to me then as now. I was 15 when I held hands with strangers in the National Cathedral. We swayed and sang, "We Shall Overcome." The culture's soil roiled and quaked, stretching for greater justice. Don't call us consumers. It was a cold gray day as the line moved slowly forward to say goodbye to a young president lying in state. I wore a new red tweed coat. I cried for days. Some of that grief still lives in me. Don't call me consumer. Wearing collegiate clothes, I marched in my capital city with 50,000 against the war. I was young and hopeful. Standing again in a church, black and white together in the college chapel, outside Washington, the streets were burning. King is dead. Don't call us consumers. That year, my mother rocked her 20-year-old daughter as I sobbed over Bobby's death, my grief now bitter. For the first time in my life, I was conscious of a feeling of utter despair. Same city, same route, I marched in patched jeans, angry and confused, yearning for an end to the war. Stop the bombing, stop the killing. Don't call me consumer. I was 24 when the peace treaty with North Vietnam was signed. My son was 24 when he went to Vietnam as a tourist. He showed me pictures of rivers, lush forests, and temples, smiling honeymoon couples. I had flashbacks of napalmed forests, children screaming from chemical burns, Buddhist monks setting themselves on fire, blood rivers, burning huts, broken hearts. A world my son does not know. Don't call me consumer. I am a citizen of this place called America, a daughter of this earth, this planet that whirls like a dervish, spreading robes of blue and green, spinning doom and marvelous creation. Don't call me consumer.
No, she didn't want to go.
I'm going to read I'm Asking for Silence, which is a poem that was written after the poem by Pablo Neruda. I'm asking for silence. Now leave me alone. Now learn to do without me. I'm going to close my eyes, and I want five things only, five favorite roots. One is endless love. The second is the spring. I cannot be if the buds don't sprout and the flowers don't bloom. The third is the sunset, slowly, peacefully disappearing behind the smooth ocean waves. The fourth, contentedness, soft and warm as an infant sleeps in its mother's arms after being fed. The fifth is freedom, my freedom. I don't want to be bound anymore. I don't want to sleep in chains. I'd give up you to be able to set my spirit free. That, friends, is all I want. Nearly nothing and almost everything. Now you can go if you wish. Leave me to my chores, my blind search, tripping and fumbling as I go. But because I'm asking for silence, don't think I'm going to die. On the contrary, it happens that I'm going to live. It happens that I am, and I am going on. Allow me to look and explore like a miner digging for gold, sifting through the silt. I will touch the darkness, feel it, caress it, cup it in my hands held high. Then and only then will I know how to live, because then and only then will I know how to love.
I'm going to close with a short piece by Marie Galletta.
In the autism classroom. It wasn't the way you slammed both elbows on the table over and over and screamed defiantly when the teacher told you, no, you can't steal Jimmy's crayons. Or even the way you threw your small frame backwards against the wall when forced to sit in the corner chair, banging your head and shoulders so hard welts rose under your blonde tangles. It wasn't your inability to speak, although you were six, or the way your torso rocked like a pendulum. Those weren't the things that broke me. It was when you climbed onto the steps and reached for me like any other child, your eyes fixed on a distant point. It was the uneasy way my insides shifted when your hands grasped mine, my small flinch, a held breath. It was the hesitation in my voice when I said, jump, Angelie, jump. And so I will turn it over to Margaret. Great. To lead us in a writing practice.
Now, paper.
Can I help you pass out?
Not there.
Mm-hmm.
I live in astonishment. I live in astonishment. The power of these pieces that we hear tonight are astonishing, and how each one of us is a scribe of our story, and it requires bravery and courage and memory and grief and loss and delight and laughter. And I think we're extremely fortunate to be able to do this. And I think we just live in wonderment at each other. And I certainly, as the teacher facilitator, feel that I'm privileged to sit in my seat day after day in absolute wonderment. So I thank you all. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for reading.
Thank
Thanks for
you.
Coming.
Thanks for having
so, we're going to write. We're going to do a quick 10-minute write.
If you don't have a pen, I do have some to share. Jim has very kindly given us some great recycled paper. And if you don't have a pen, you're going to have to buy Helen some paper to write.
Yeah.
But equally to write on that. Okay. Who's, would you like to write? Let's see how we go. Thank you. Do we need more paper?
Back here.
Yay.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Do we need pen?
You need a pen? Put your hand up.
We need paper. All right, who is going to take the leap and throw out a jump off line? I can certainly do it, but I'd like someone else to. Thea, you've got a jump off line for us.
I remember when.
That's the jump off line. I remember when. Thank you, Thea. 10 minutes. Pen. Do you want to use my book to paper?
Oh.
Yeah? Anybody else need a pen? I remember when. Write fast. Don't think. A pen. Pen?
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah.
Here's some.
Oh. It's okay. And it's just like. This is the junk.
You're writing to your plant?
Yeah. I'm going to include it. Thank you.
Begin to wind up. Okay, time. Who might like to start? And you are?
Nina.
Nina. Welcome, Nina. Would you like to stand, or would you just prefer to sit?
I'll sit.
Great. Go ahead.
I remember when life was a bicycle, white with blue stripes, huh, and a plastic basket with a horn almost as loud as the Studebaker. Huh? I remember when puddles came up to my knees and the brook overflowed, frogs jumping everywhere. Oh. I remember when life was swinging high into the trees on a tire swing and a heavy rope, when rain or shine did not matter. I remember when life was beef borscht and matzo ball soup and grated potatoes fried in chicken fat, and grandma kept a carp in the bathtub at Passover. I remember when grandpa smoked smelly cigars and listened to the Brooklyn Dodgers on the radio while grandma and mama talked in their native tongue. I remember when the nasty fat boy down the block chased us and called us names like dirty kike,
yeah,
and threw stones at us.
Yeah.
I remember the day he fell down a flight of stairs and died. I remember I was glad and then felt guilty for being happy he was dead.
Wow. So let's give Nina just a couple of lines of recall. My grandmother kept a carp in the bathtub at Passover time. That would be recall. Is there any other recall for Nina?
I remember my bike and the puddles coming up to my knees. And my father listening to the Dodgers.
Yeah.
My grandpa smoking a cigar.
And something about the noise of the bike was as loud as the Studebaker?
The horn, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Who'd like to go next? Great, Michael.
I remember when we left Oklahoma. We rode in a 1955 Ford two-toned red and white sedan. Yeah. All out through some black-skied town in Texas, where an unremembered relative lived. It was an oil town, and the air smelled like what? Sulfur. But something just as close to hell as it. Perhaps brimstone. We drove on through rolling hills and plains that seemed to promise nothing but more of the same. Grass, silos, cattle, and an occasional rider on horseback by the side of the road. I remember waking in the morning in some motel I didn't remember arriving at and looking out the window at cactus and scurrying lizards and an already hot day. The road became straight, but off to the side the painted cliffs flowed in tones of brown, red, yellow, and sage. The sign said, "The snake pit, see the giant rattler, or dinosaur egg, centuries old, fossilized." Ahead, a stretch of blue-black mountains in California.
I remember when we left Oklahoma.
Yeah.
55 Studebaker.
The car?
Oh, the car.
It was a 55.
Ford.
Two-tone.
Red and white.
Red and white. Yeah. And looking out of the window, I saw the cacti. And the
scurrying lizards.
And the lizards. That was what it was. The lizards.
Already scorching sun. Mm-hmm.
And the strange smell.
Not could sulfur.
Not sulfur, maybe brimstone.
Something is just as bad.
Oh, thank you. Jim, would you like to read? Yay. I'll put you on the spot. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Good.
It is okay.
Good.
I remember when I had a dream where you and I walked down the rural road in the winter dawn.
Mm.
The dream was so real, it was a dream without any dream feeling, that when I woke up, I didn't understand where I was, that I was in my room. And the slow winter dawn reluctantly, slowly filled the room, slowly climbed up the wall, slowly lighting your picture on the wall. And then I recalled the dream that just ended, walking down a winter dawn rural road with a touch of frost on my neighbor's fenced field. Mm.
Dream that didn't feel like a dream yet.
When I woke up, I didn't know where I was.
Mm-hmm. I was in my room. Slowly.
And the cold came up through the window, through the wall.
Mm-hmm. And the light on the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And walking down a rural road.
With you. I was walking with you in the dream, but didn't feel like a dream. Whew. Nan.
I remember when summer meant no school, all day spent outside, not caring about anything but fun. I remember when gas cost under $1 a gallon. I remember having a party line and listening to our neighbors' conversations. I remember when stockings had to be held up with a girdle.
That's right.
I remember when I used to call work, sitting at a desk for 8 hours, typing someone else's words and moving paper around and around. I remember when I could enjoy an ear of corn until it was reduced to a handful of pieces of the sweet, tender cob.
Oh.
I remember when I hiked to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and was afraid to walk across the suspension bridge, even with the promise of an ice-cold beer on the other side. I remember finally taking the first step onto that bridge, and the second, and every step until I had made it to the other side. I don't remember the beer, but I remember the $5 shower I took 5 days later when I'd hiked back to the top. I remember before riding practice, I liked riding and thought it would always be a fun hobby. I remember how after a short winter session of riding practice,
my first, how I recognize myself as a serious writer, a real writer, a writer with many things to say.
I remember when I used to think writing, I used to like writing, and I thought writing would be a fun hobby. But then I remember I took a course in writing practice, and then I took it seriously. Carl, are you going to read?
Sure.
Yeah? How are we doing for time, Jim? Excuse me one second.
Do we have a couple more?
A couple more? Okay, great.
I remember when I thought it would never end.
Yeah.
The moaning, the silence, unbearable, and the screaming, without let up. Silence, yes. I would hear it despite the presence of constant agony, voiced without reserve. It was there in the center, holding, as a backstage impresario, the threads of wailing, the echoes of muttering, the release of all that had ever been held at bay in a thousand lives. Mm. Overhead, searchlights crossing among night clouds, and at the edge, a ragged wall of concertina wire. Who made this place? Who brought us here? What did we do?
Who made this place? Who brought us here? What did we do?
Overhead searchlight.
Yeah, crisscrossing.
I remember the moaning and the screaming.
And then there was the silence. It was at the center of everything. It feels like there's even more there. Mm-hmm. John, you want to read?
Okay. I remember when there's not death in the air, when my safe little world seemed secure and safe. I ate the food provided, slept in my bed, and shared Thanksgiving with my extended family. I didn't know I would become a disaffected youth, rebelling against phantoms that I couldn't identify, inherited traits passed on from the pain past of parents who couldn't or wouldn't challenge their demons. Like a progressive illness, my spirits were shredded, and life became a burden rather than a challenge. I had to survive the Russian roulette of combat, and then I had to challenge my own demons.
Russian roulette of combat.
Parents who wouldn't or couldn't confront their demons.
I didn't know I would become a disaffected
youth.
I remember when the smell of death wasn't in the air, is that right? The beginning?
When it wasn't in the
air. Wasn't
when there was not death in
the air. Yeah, when there was not death.
Thanksgiving with the family. Yes, thank you. One or two more? You want to read, Katie? No?
Mm-hmm.
You want to read?
Yeah. I remember when my mother and I visited my grandmother on Sunday afternoons. Cuddy Hill was where she lived, where she bore 13 children, worked the fields, milked the cows, butchered the pigs, baked the most delicious donuts on her coal stove, and called me Suska.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday afternoons with Grandma, all her living sons and daughters with their spouses and children showed up for Sunday supper. You had better show up. It was a time of sitting around the huge kitchen table with its oilcloth tablecloth. My aunts and my mom preparing the food while all my uncles sat around the room drinking a bottle of Iron City beer, or what I always loved, my Uncle Henry playing the polkas on the accordion. Sunday afternoon at Grandma's for us, cousins were walking up and down Cuddy Hill or exploring the contents of my mysterious grandma's cedar chest, where I scoured the old photo albums and discovered my dad.
She called me Suska.
Better be there for that dinner. I know.
Yeah. I scoured the old photo albums and I discovered my dad. One more. Okay.
I remember when I woke each day in wonder. Wild-haired girl alive in the woods. Friend of foxes and big-bellied toads. I remember when the luminous moon was too small to hold me, and my red eyes gleamed in the dark. I remember warm mud kissing the soles of my dancing feet while my fingers traced sparks in the iron-charged air. I remember the language of trees. Alive, alive, they whispered. I raced down the rows of gladioli, arms outstretched, fingertips barely touching the blossoms, a feast of yellows and corals, pollen-soaked. Glorious, glorious, glorious.
Mm. Alive, the trees whispered, alive.
Red eyes.
Whew. Thank you all. This was wonderful. For those of you who are coming to Writing Practice next week, we're starting next Monday and Tuesday. If you didn't read tonight, bring your rights to read on Monday and Tuesday. For sure. Thank you so much. Thank you. See you next week.
We have a donation bowl over on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to it, and there are copies of the new anthology, of course, put notes, and we encourage you to take a look at those if you haven't seen it.
You too. I'll see you in the summer. Are you going to do
I'm
going to start mid-June and do mid-June to mid-July.
Oh,
are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm doing the
Write on your travels. But if you want to do intercession, you can.
Do you have energy for a quick bite on the way home or a drink? Or
okay, for sure.
Bye. Yeah, have a wonderful time at your new session.